If you're still coming in, please come in, find seats. There's seats down here up front. Just a couple left, but we promise not to fight. First of all, I want to make a couple quick acknowledgments. One, thanks Comic-Con for hosting this panel. Obviously, there's a great need and desire for it. Secondly, I want to thank the Major Spoilers podcast, who did a podcast on this topic with Chip and Shannon that inspired this panel. They run a fantastic podcast, Google Major Spoilers. They're on iTunes as well. I'd like to, first of all, who in here has an indie comic, whether in print or on the web, whether completed or in their dreams, that they want to learn? That's a lot of people. That's great. Fantastic. That's great. I'd like to introduce my panelists. On my left is the marketing director of Boom Studios. He's also the writer of his own indie comic called Left on Mission, which is how he got his job at Boom Studios. He is a veritable font of information and a daring do when it comes to marketing comics. Please welcome from Los Angeles, Chip Mosher.
Thank you very much.
Secondly, we have a bit of bad news. Shannon Wheeler was attempting to fly down here from Portland. There's a bit of trouble with the airline, something we've all experienced before, so we won't be here. What's that?
Young Brothers.
Oh, yeah. The good news is that we have a fantastic and able replacement. Second to my left, he is the creator of the webcomics The Rack and Lydia. He runs commentary on his website, bokukevin.com. He's here from Boston, Massachusetts. His name is Kevin Church. And all the way down to the end, we have someone who has a very long and storied career in comics. She has spanned many, many roles from editor to journalist. She is the voice behind The Beat, a comics blog on Publishers Weekly, which sets the gold standard for blogging about comics. Sorry, Kevin. Ignore her at your peril. Please welcome, from New York, Heidi McDonald. So I wanted to kick this off and see if we can dispel some doom clouds here. There's been a lot of depressing information for indie comics over the past few months in terms of an overall dip in sales, trouble in comic stores, and most threateningly, new minimums at Diamond Comics, which threatened to block out a whole generation of indie comics that we've all grown up with and loved in the past. And I just want to throw it out to all the panelists, despite all that, why is this a great time to launch an indie comic?
Me first?
Go for it, Jay. Don't be shy.
I know there's a lot of people that are all into the doom and gloom of the direct market, of the new minimum orders that Diamond's instituted earlier this year. And there's an old saying that every crisis is an opportunity. And I think there's a lot of opportunities out there that can take advantage of all these naysayers that say it's a bad time to launch anything indie. There's a great blog, is it Jonathan Jackson Miller?
Yeah.
Jonathan Jackson Miller has a great blog, Comicron.com, and he has a lot of numbers. So let's just blow some numbers out here. In 2000, overall direct market North American sales were at 190 million. In 2008, we're at 263 million. So that's growth of $70 million in 8 years, which I think is pretty stellar. The overall North American market for direct market and newsstand comics in 2000 was $255 to $275 million. In 2008, it's $680 to $710 million. So there's a lot of growth out there overall. You know, if you look at the big picture, and I think with, you know, I've been involved in comics in one way or the other since the 80s. And, you know, from being a retailer to working at Capital City Distribution to working with Shannon Wheeler with Adhesive Comics and helping him out with Too Much Coffee Man and launching that, and I just think that the avenues right now for publishing indie comic books are many and phenomenal. You have the web, which is probably the best way to launch anything. It's pretty much the main focus of all my marketing at Boom Studios, which I'm happy to say has gone from last year not really ranked in the top 20 to being the number seven in the top 10 comic books in the last 2 months running publishers. Sorry, I got a cold, so I'm a little off today, so I apologize. So Kevin has a web comic. I think web comics are great. We've done some web stuff. Sam used to run MySpace Comic Books. We did a bunch of launches with him for Haxton Northwind. That was really stellar. You know, there's just a lot of great opportunities. So I'm excessively positive about indie comics right now.
I'm taking it more from a creator perspective because Chip very much is a marketing guy with a publishing house. That does a really good job. For the individual creator, the web really is the one great, it really levels the playing field because you get the chance to reach out and touch people outside of the direct market chain. The direct market as it stands with Diamond Comics, it is pretty hard to get your name out there through Diamond. But now you've got tools to access comic shop owners. You've got tools to send a PDF, send a link to the website, to just kind of friendly contact people. You can create postcards. You can get a batch of 250 postcards made and send them to the comic shops that are actually buying things from creators for like $60. If you can't spend $60 to tell 250 guys that can buy your product, they can buy it, then you probably shouldn't even be trying. That's kind of a thing. You are going to have to spend a little money to make a lot more money. With my webcomic, The Rack, we just put out our first collection. It's the first year of the book kind of compacted down. We got rid of stuff that really didn't fit in the book. And we just had a small initial print run of 250 copies. I've sold 75 to different retailers, four different retailers. And then the rest have all gone to individuals that read the webcomic on a daily basis. So while the webcomic, you know, a strip a day, a strip every 3 days may not work for you, doing the chapter-based webcomics may be a way for you to actually start putting together something that you can eventually publish. A lot of times it has to do with getting your work done. Stop planning. Stop sitting there. Talk to an artist. Reach out. Communicate with other people. We've got Matt Maxwell in the front row here. He does a phenomenal job of, he hustles. You've got to hustle. Don't be afraid. If they're put off by you hustling your books, they probably weren't going to buy it anyway.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the simple version. I mean, if they get offended by an email, if they get bothered by a postcard, they were probably just buying from Marvel and DC anyway. So, and that's...
But your book is done completely outside the Diamond system.
Completely outside. We don't even have an ISBN yet, which.
Yeah, no, that's.
But I've been.
Should, that's bad.
That was the worst mistake, and it's going to cost me $150 now to get one. But again, if I can't spend.
I'll sell you one of the
cheap. Yeah. But you know, if you can't spend the $150, if you can't invest, if you can't not go to the movies a couple of times to buy what you need to put yourself out there, then you're not serious.
I think I would echo, you know, what Kevin was just saying. It's like, if you believe in yourself, you know, you'll never go, you have, believing in yourself, if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. So that's kind of the job one right there. Why is it a great time? Well, Google just this morning announced this Google Comics, you know, skins for Google. And there's over 50 projects, and they have like Renee French, and Charlie Brown, and Vertigo, and Superman, and Jaime Hernandez, and Crazy Cat. I mean, it's really an incredible spectrum of comics out there. And I mean, but to see someone who's amazing and wonderful, like Renee French, but pretty niche-y, let's face it, out there with DC and, you know, all these heavy players, it's like the playing field, you know, is never level, but there is an access level that is very accessible to everyone. And I mean, I think it's comics moment. I mean, I do give myself a reality check and a pinch test quite often because, you know, I'm a blogger about comics. So I live, you know, eat, sleep, breathe it all day. So of course I'm seeing only, you know, the things that I'm focusing on. But, you know, my RSS feed has gone from here to here, you know, and the stories that I see are just every single day. You know, there's a story that I would see in my news searches that would come up once every month that comes up once a day now, you know, which is, oh, comics are for kids, isn't that cool, this graphic novel is great. So, you know, the opportunities are there, and there's, on the ICB2 conference, Comics and Media conference yesterday, there was a bunch of people talking about movies and comics, and what they were all saying was that we're getting increasingly, even the biggest studios, you know, a Twilight or a Harry Potter or a Star Trek, I mean, those are increasingly rare. The giant tentpole is kind of dying off in a way. Everything's getting nichier. Everything is cobbling together a bunch of small audiences to make a bigger audience. And I think that's something that comics are poised to do very well. So if you have the confidence and the knowledge to know who your audience is, I think that's really key, knowing who your audience is. I think the tools are all there.
Yeah, don't be afraid to write smart. You know, there are people there that will get the joke. I mean, you should think about a broader audience, but you should definitely... Don't be afraid to throw in the esoteric jokes. Look at PvP, look at Penny Arcade, if you want. Like, Penny Arcade's an engine now, and they make really esoteric nerd jokes that maybe 8% of their audience get a lot of the time, but people still come back. And they've sold how many books? They've sold...
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Penny Arcade, I was going to talk about this, I think Penny Arcade's a great example, you know, of a web comic that has just been... extremely successful, you know, going to print and you know, and back. And so, you know, it's definitely a business model to look at.
So hopefully, if you're here, you've already at least internally embraced the requirement that you must be both creator and marketer for your own work. And Chip, I know you have three rules of marketing that are very, very crucial and highly entertaining.
You might have to remind me about that. I took some cold medicine this morning.
I think the first one was something along the lines of be shameless.
Yes, that's great. Yeah. Be shameless. You know, a lot of people. It's funny. I'm a fairly aggressive person, right, Matt? Yes. And so I always find it funny because, you know, people will talk to me like, yeah, you know, I'm going to promote my comic book. And, you know, I wrote Heidi once and she didn't respond to me. And I'm like, write her again. Sorry, Heidi. You know, but it's like you have to be an unstoppable force. You know, a lot of people in comics, you know, because comics is not like the biggest mass media, mainstream medium, like movies. A lot of people, like, you know, it's like, I'm going to be cool and hip, you know, and I, you know, selling is not cool, you know. Well, guess what? Too bad. So, you know, you need to be shameless and you know, being hip and cool, you know, if you want to be hip and cool and be in your room and have your mini comics that no one's buying, then that's great. Or you can be shameless and be online and contact people and email them over and over again and get your stuff out. And, you know, don't worry about what people are going to think that you're not cool because you're bugging the hell out of them. You know, that's part of the game.
Isn't there some sort of effect where people who don't respond to you being shameless about your own book, these are people who would not be buying your book in the first place?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think the rule is... The second rule is be aggressive, which
I covered that.
But you know, maybe from the other side of the coin, Heidi, you know, these.
Well, yes, I you know, I mean, Chip has
what,
a point.
What are the rules of conduct?
Because right.
You don't need your own PR person. You need a higher PR firm. But if you're doing your own PR, well, what are some things to keep in mind?
Okay. Well, you should have something to say about that. You should have some actual. I did notice that after Diamonds set in their new roles, that my email skyrocketed with people who were just like, you know, oh, I'm doing this comic, and, you know, I'd love for you to mention it on your blog. And, you know, I try, I mean, I you know, this is why my time is spent so many different ways, but I do try to click through on those links, you know? It might not be immediately, and you know, I get so much email a day. I mean, to be honest, that first time I tried, but maybe I'm busy, I don't. So if you email me again, you know, eventually I will click on that link and I'll take a look at it. And if it's something I like, I will say, hey, here's a cool. Actually, there's some guys who do a webcomic called Children of Light, and I think they're down in Charlotte, and it's a really beautiful looking comic. And you know, they emailed a bunch of times, and finally late at night I clicked on it and I was like, oh, this looks really cool, and you know, it's got a nice concept, and they really have their act together, which I caught on to very quickly. And you know, I eventually did mention it a few times, and you know, they've had a book out, and I made sure I mentioned that the book was out. And it's important to have your act together. And so a couple things, I put a post about this, but like, if you are, like, I run a lot of show promotion. I mean, there's no way I could run everybody's booth here, but I try to run a whole lot. And you know, some people were just like, oh, I have a little comic, and they sent me a picture that was a good looking picture, so I ran that, you know? But if you're sending a picture, don't make it CMYK. But I mean, you'd be surprised. I just got an image from a major media corporation that was giant, took about 10 minutes to download, and CMYK. And you know, I mean, it takes me a couple minutes to fix that up, but.
I'll never forget when I first started with Boom, and I sent, and Heidi and I have known each other for a while, and I sent Heidi the schedule for Boom signing, and she wrote me back. She's like, oh, thank you for having this formatted so I can just copy paste it into the blog post.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, so, you know, always be cognizant. If you're sending stuff out, make it easy for people.
And there's another publisher who's absolutely one of my favorite publishers, and I won't name their name, but they, first off, didn't send me their news until yesterday when I'm already on the ground, and it's, you know, my time is literally like 5 minutes either way. And they send their emails in this hybrid web format where they have all the images embedded and it looks great in the email, but there's no way I can copy that. And like, there's no way I can like put up their news because it would take me so long to copy the paste and cut and then to put the, yes.
So what format?
What format? Well, just a nice little press release without indentations or fancy HTML. Make sure the link is printed, typed out in there, you know, because, I mean, I'm talking about me, other people might have a browser that doesn't HTMLize it, so make sure your address is actually typed out in the thing, cut and paste. You know, images should be JPEGs, they should not be giant, you know, 300 DPI, shrink them down, 172, makes by, you know, my Gmail is full now. I'm at some point during the show, I'm going to have to, I get the red bar every time. I might not be getting my email during the show because I have to stop and, you know, clean it out. I mean, these are my petty little problems, but as you can tell from what I say, I do remember them, right?
Yeah.
So, and that is a little black mark against you. You know, be clear. And again, like, know what your story's about, you know, know what is your focus. Know if it's, you know, some of the best things are indescribable. Some of the best webcomics, like I was looking at the collection of Sinfest the other day.
Yeah, like Sinfest is impossible to describe.
Right.
It's not, you can't elevator pitch.
Right.
Sinfest.
Yeah.
You should think about like how to quickly explain something. Like The Rack is a comic strip about a comic shop. Well, you probably may or may not want to read it. You kind of automatically know, but. We get a lot of people. But what we do get is we get a lot of.
Right.
We do get a lot of people who don't actually follow comics that read it because they like the characters and they were referred by their comic loving friend that said, "Hey, you know what? This is actually about people, as much as it is about, you know, who Green Lantern is this week." And you know, a lot of it is word of mouth. And like Heidi was saying, when you send people emails, make it as easy as possible. I get an awful lot too because my blog has traffic. And I mean, I got one from The Guardian today because apparently The Guardian UK is going to be doing a comic book soon. And it was like the most polite email I'd ever received. It was like, "Hi Kevin, we like your blog." And I'm like, "Well, that's great. You probably sent that to 50 people." But they included just a very brief link to what they're going to be doing. And they're like, "You know, would you like more information?" And I don't really know if you need to go the two-step method.
Yeah.
But they gave me a link and said, "Let us know if you want more info." And that was, I mean, I thought it was really well formatted. It was brief and to the point. and you, I didn't spend all day going through it. Like, I really hate it when you get the wall of text. Any press release, I work in marketing as my day job, and any press release I do is under 400 words. So,
yeah, the
so brief is key.
Yeah.
So you're saying basically like a 30-second pitch in text form.
Yeah, if someone can't spend the, you know, even I'd say even 15 seconds. If they can't read your headline, your subhead, and your first paragraph, and know that they want to read the rest, you're not doing anything. You're not doing it right.
And if you have a release date, you might want to include that.
Yeah.
You would be surprised.
I get lots that don't have release dates. And I've actually emailed them saying, "When's this coming out?" Yeah.
Do you mind if I answer?
Go ahead, yeah.
All these people...
Repeat the question.
She just stated basically that it goes against the resume, where a resume you're trying to sell yourself really hard. That's basically what you were saying. You're still selling yourself, but I think that you need to be respectful of the other person's time. I think a lot of people kind of respect you more if you're like, "Hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. Here's a link. Attach an image sometimes. Images are great. And that's it." But anyway.
All these news sites need content. They live and die off their web traffic. You can provide them free content.
Yeah. They're looking literally for things that provide page views so they can get ad revenue.
If you have a compelling thing that they can put on their site that will drive traffic, that the readers will like, then you're golden.
And in Hollywood, they call it the elevator pitch, because in theory, you're stuck in an elevator with the head of distribution or development for some major studio, and you have 20 seconds or less to pitch your idea, and that's it. And as a creator, it's sometimes a little galling to think, "Well, this beautiful idea that I developed, this multi-layered story, I don't want to kill my baby and put in this tight little package." But as a creator, you are a communicator, and if you can communicate your idea in that short span of time, then these people know they can do the same for your idea on their blog. And it just shows how much thought you put into your idea and developed it, your property. So how many people in this room, show of hands, are here promoting their book, their webcomic? Now, I want to ask these three about shows, because San Diego is just a tiny little regional show where not much is going on. With shows, when you're small press, what shows do you go to? Do you go to San Diego where there's tons of announcements? Do you just stick to the smaller shows? Do you do the regional shows? Is it a mix?
Yep. Chip?
I think the regional shows are probably much more important right now for people doing indie comics.
And, you know, and what regional shows would you recommend?
You know, the shows that Boom attends and, you know, that we do really well at, you know, we do New York Comic Con, which isn't that regional, you know, it's a big show, but Emerald City is an incredible show, WonderCon is a really great show, Heroes is a really great show,
Baltimore
is a really great show, you know, we're doing the Toronto Fan Expo this year, So I don't think I left anything out there. Those are pretty critical. We do really well at all those regional shows.
Do you feel like it's important even to go to the what people consider the really, really small ones? You know, your local city is
Baltimore. I think as an indie creator, like, you know, for Boom, you know, I don't think it's as important, though. You know, if I could do it, I would. You know, if I could do every frickin' show, you know, I could, because, you know, we make comic books for people to read, you know, and so getting out there to the fans, I think, is really important.
He would sell a snake oil from the back of a wagon.
Pretty much.
In a heartbeat, just traveling America.
I mean, I think it's really important to know who your neighbors are, too, you know? I mean, everybody needs a community. I mean, the webcomics creates a virtual community, but, you know, seeing people eye to eye always, you know, is the true test of it. And, you know, I think it's really, I sometimes do a talk for SVA with Calvin Reed, because we both do PW Comics Week newsletter, and like, we have our little bullet points, and one of them is like, team up, you know, find some friends, like-minded friends, you know, and that's really important, because then, to be honest, you link to each other, You know, you're both like, you know, my pal is doing this, and then they're like, my pal's doing this. And it builds. It builds this whole idea. And, you know, people, readers, another idea people were talking about yesterday at the conference is that it really isn't just one thing anymore. It's kind of like the big alternate reality game that surrounds the thing, you know, and we all kind of create that a little bit. You know, I mean, not to point to Matt again, sitting here, but in the front row, but, you know, Matt has his pointing. He has his comic. He has a blog where he writes about things. He goes to shows a lot. He does these long, detailed posts that are very insightful.
He hustles.
But I mean, he's also created a whole thing around his comic, you know? And I mean, the very successful web comics all do that, you know, with, you know, like Penny Arcade is one example, and with the merchandising, and they have the blog. I mean, Apewood, he has character blogs. I mean, I don't know how he finds the time to do this, but I mean, they just, like, he's created his whole alternate reality around the strip, and, you know, but it all creates this team that I think the readers want to be on the team, you know?
I'm going to ask you to speak for Shannon, who's not here, the creator of Too Much Coffee Man, because you've known Shannon for 20 years. You knew him in Austin. You knew him before the creation of Too Much Coffee Man. And Shannon is well known for his unique style of merchandise. Can you talk about some of his experiences when he started out? Why merchandise is important for a comic?
It was really, you know, I went to college in Austin in the early 90s, and probably I think I missed Chris Ware by about a month. I think he moved out of Austin about a month before I moved in. But, you know, we had Shannon and Sam Hurt and, you know, just Robert Rodriguez was drawing cartoons. You know, we just had a great crowd there. And, you know, Shannon came up with the idea for Too Much Coffee Man, did some mini comics, went to Kinko's, you know, had color covers. He took his bike. He went up and down the drag in the college, sold it to all the retail stores, you know, sold 10,000 copies of the first mini comic, and he grew up in Berkeley, and so he'd go back to Berkeley every 6 months to visit his family, and he'd do the same thing there. And Comic Relief was in Berkeley and became a big supporter.
If I can interrupt, he sold 10,000 copies of a self-published mini comic from Kinko's without the aid of a distributor.
Exactly.
Or the internet. That was
Internet. This is 1993.
So he was using smoke signals.
Yeah. You know.
And this kind of goes back to your question about going to a smaller show that may be in your hometown, even if it's just card tables in the American Legion. You know, it's important to build up a following in a place where you live, because they'll really start to own you and support you and defend you as part of one of their own. And that's what Shannon took advantage of. He was selling this mini comic not in comic book stores. Well, definitely in comic book stores, but
coffee shops.
Yeah, where else? I mean,
yeah, bookstores, chocolate shops, any store that sold anything, he'd go in and say, "Hey, do you want to sell my mini comic?" You know, and then he published a comic book. It went through Diamond. The first issue of Too Much Coffee Man sold, I think, 10,000 copies for the first printing. You know, and he kept it in print and just rolled it over the years and always had it offered again, which you can't do anymore. And then, you know, and then he was a self-publisher for a while. And then, you know, and we'd do crazy stuff. He had this crazy idea of... because variants were really popular back in 94. And
2009.
Yeah, and so he thought it would be funny to actually shoot the comic book. So they had an anthology, Adhesive Comics, the company that he had with a couple of his buddies, including Martin Thomas, who later colored my comic, Left on Mission for Boom. They did these stories, and Ted Nafee drew one of them. It was one of Ted Nafee's first things, and all the stories had this bullet motif going through. And so we went out in the country, and we took a .22 and shot the whole print run through the middle. And the top copy was all messed up and had the powder burns, and they bagged and boarded those and sold those for $20 as the powder burn edition. And then he did toilet paper.
But real quick, the gunshot is a gimmick that got him coverage.
Yeah.
Wizard
coverage.
That's an idea. Yeah.
You can Jab number 3, bullet hole edition. Yep. You can find it on the internet. It still goes for sale.
Yeah.
It was the best promotion comics I think I've ever seen. And then Wheeler had, you know, he did toilet papers and coffee mugs and you know, just merchandise it. And what I thought was funny is there's some other people in the community who are like, yeah, that Wheeler, he's really good at marketing.
Yeah, yeah, but he had also, I mean, to be completely truthful about it, Shannon also had the great idea.
Yeah.
The title, Too Much Coffee Man, you know? And it was right at the time, it was before the internet, but it was the rise of the designer coffee. I mean,
yep.
He seized right on that trend and, you know, did it for all it was worth. But, I mean, it became part of the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
You know, this image of the guy soaking in the cup of coffee. And, you know, I mean, that's the lightning, you know? Like, if you can get that.
Definitely, definitely. The one thing I always thought was interesting is, like, some of his peers, like, poo-pooed his talent because he did so much merchandising, you know? And it's like, you know...
It's money.
Just like everyone poo-poos Charles Schulz because he, you know, merchandised a lot of the peanuts, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's always... It was funny, like a lot of the sour grapes back then, but I find interesting the growth of indie comics the last 20 years, like everyone who's doing web comics is talking about their business model. You know, okay, I'm gonna have my web comic and I'm really gonna have my traffic revenue, but I'm gonna make money off my t-shirts. You know, and I think that was really an anathema in the indie comic scene 20 years ago.
And going back to doing the local shows, this is just an example. We did Mocha this year at the completely miserable armory that it was in, and we had postcards, that's it. We had the book. Our first day we did really well. The second day of Mocha, I think for everybody, was kind of a bust. Our first day we sold like 45 copies of a $15 book, which, you know, paid for a big chunk of the print bill, and the postcards kind of just kind of got picked up. We had a 20% increase in traffic after Mocha, and that's New York. That's literally just a New York show. That, I mean, people come from other places to visit Mocha, but it's really not a big show at all. And so I definitely say, if you can do a show, a small show, get a table, and don't be afraid to smile. Don't be afraid to engage people. Even if just say, hey, take a postcard. That's a big thing, is you get that whole, you know, culture of cool, I'm gonna be arch and indie. People like being smiled at. People like being engaged. Sometimes you can just compliment them. Hey, that's a great Daredevil tie, you know?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, with the other, like, for print media being hurt by the internet, like new magazines, newspapers, are printing costs going up, down, or remain unchanged for companies?
You can get stuff printed pretty cheap. It's pretty darn economical with web printing, and by web printing I mean like there's no plates anymore.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, you just search around, you know, a lot of people are printing in the United States is not affordable. Everyone prints out of the United States, whether it be at Quebecor or in China or Korea, and the turnaround's a lot faster than you'd think.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
I mean, our book was done with Lulu, which was not the most cost-effective solution, but it was one that gave us the turnaround time we needed because he mentions how fast it is. But I have no room for the 1,000 books that I could get for my $1,000 if I'd gone with a Chinese printer, because I live in a tiny apartment in Boston with my girlfriend. But
for the price you would pay for the 1,000 books, you could, like, you know, pulp, you could recycle like half of them and you'd still like, and keep 500 and still make a profit.
Yeah, well, the thing is you could use those copies and send them to retailers as freebies.
Exactly.
I mean,
or bloggers.
Yeah, yeah, we went with Lulu, and I'm probably revealing a bit too much here. Our per copy cost of 128 page book, 7.5 by 7.5, great color cover, black and white interiors, was $4.25. I'm selling those for $14.95. That's a 300%. That's a 300%. I mean, you don't get that, and that's, you know, us going with a domestic printer that's print on demand. So I definitely recommend, you know, there are definitely really good, if you've got the warehouse space, and if you've got, I mean, again, if you can spend the money and get the books from China and send them to the people that can sell your book for you.
Yeah, never. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, one of the things I always try to do in my day-to-day life in doing business is I never take the common accepted knowledge as fact. It's like, you know, oh, doing that's really expensive. Well, I'm going to find out for myself. And you'll find out a lot of times, It's not as expensive as you think.
It never hurts to pick up the phone and call someone instead of emailing either. That's what we did with Lulu, and we negotiated a better rate. I mean, because literally they're like, oh, you're going to be printing 250 versus printing 50. I mean, these companies are interested in making money. Lots of it.
That gentleman right in the front.
Yeah, I just had a comment. It all kind of depends on your distribution model. If you're looking to get into Diamond or Haven or something, then yeah, you've got to hit the higher numbers in your printing to have a shot at making any profit on it. If you're doing direct market, you're going to make the most profit doing cover color covers, black and white interiors. If you guys are thinking in color, you can get away with grayscale. Look at it. It looks great, and it's probably a third of the price in a lot of cases to print it, and you can deal in smaller print runs.
Yeah.
You can get color done really, really cheap.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know, you look at Kablam, and you're paying, you know.
I'm not talking about you. Get on Google. Actually talk to some real printers that aren't the POD ones, and you, seriously, you can get stuff really cheap, really cheap. And I'm not talking like I'm distributing through Diamond, like stuff that I get as promotional stuff, I get cheaper than Kablam.
There's a reason Boom has Cocaine Fridays.
Not through anyone is Twittering.
Something, and you know, Sam, I want you to chime in too, Joe, just to kind of step back from the you know, one person, one, you know, unstoppable force. Do you think, just run quickly through some of the alternates to Diamond, you know? I mean, you mentioned Haven. Do you think the next thing is going to come along? Is someone going to develop another alternate distributor? Or?
Well, I think the best alternate distributor for a comic book is anything online, anything on the internet, anything digital. The costs are super low, even though the cost of printing is sinking. It still can't be any less than printing online. And it's a great way to build your audience. If you talk about kind of this wall that Diamond has thrown up, this minimum of sales for what they will distribute, Diamond is actually, they're willing to work with people. And if you have a web comic and you can demonstrate to them, yeah, I've already got this fan base, I've already got X thousand people visiting me on a regular basis. They'll look at that number and say, like, well, out of that, we can reasonably expect to sell a percentage, and this is profitable for us. Yeah, we'll put you in stores. So it's a really great way to convince Diamond retailers, bloggers, what have you, anyone to support you when you actually invest money and print a book.
Yeah, I would just like to just hit on a couple of things because we're getting close to the end here. Is, you know, two things that I wanted to communicate is, you know, you hear a lot about the 3,000 stores, you know, which is actually, you know, really, Diamond has 3,000.
You mean 3,000 direct market stores.
Yeah, yeah, which is actually, you know, the real thing is that they're saying is there are 3,000 accounts. Done a lot of research, a lot of marketing research in my own last 3 years at Boom. I know other people who have my same position. You know, we're really talking about 1,800 direct market retailer stores in the United States, maximum. And out of that, you know, the people that are buying indie comics, I would say, you know, black and white indie comics, you know, hardcore, you probably 200 stores. And you can get on Wikipedia and you can find the top 20 cities in the United States. And then you can find all the stores in those top 20 cities and you can figure those 200 stores out. It's really easy. When I did Left on Mission for Boom, I called 100 stores in 2 days, you know, and sent them PDFs of the comic book. It's totally doable. The other thing I wanted to communicate is that, I don't know if you guys heard about Irredeemable and our Mark Waid is Evil campaign at Boom Studios, but, you know, we did that campaign, you know, for a big book. Obviously, Mark Waid's a name, you know, so that helps a lot. You know, but with Unthinkable, with Mark Sable, we did an alternate reality game, and we did a website. Mark Sable wrote all the copy for the website, wrote blogs for all the characters. You know, we had this interactive game going on for a month. You know, and let me tell you, I'll tell you what my budget is for every marketing venture that I do at Boom. My budget is zero. So the alternate reality game, I think the domain name I had to buy, it was $20. Mark Sable, the creator, wrote all the copy. He wrote and he did a blog on LiveJournal, did a blog on Blogspot, did this and that and the other, you know, and I had a person that I worked with do all the graphics, you know, and we did this great promotion and the book sold really, really well. And then it helped that he was detained by the TSA for a script. But, you know, that's another story. But, you know, with the Mark Waid is Evil campaign, and Irredeemable is our top-selling title now, you know, we did the Mark Waid is Evil campaign. I had banner ads everywhere that I did, you know, on the cheap. I bought a domain. We designed the site internally. You know, it was easy to do, you know, and just spent, you know, every living minute, like, you know, doing this viral marketing campaign. And then everyone was like, what the heck is Mark Waid is Evil? And then we revealed Mark Waid is Irredeemable. It's a new book coming out. And then it was like, oh, you know, and so it was really cool. It was a lot of fun to do. You know, we sent 100 t-shirts out to the top 100 retailers, you know, and...
And comic book retailers will wear anything.
Yeah.
Because they don't buy their own clothes.
And all the retailers loved the shirt because everyone that came into their stores asked them, "What? Why do you hate Mark?" You know, and they go, "Oh, no, it's a new book coming out." You know, and so, you know... I mean, we're the number, you know, right now we're the number 7 comic book company, which is awesome. But even then, like, I don't have budgets for any of my marketing campaigns. You know, my budget is how little money I can spend for the maximum profit. You know, so, you know, just get out there, use your elbow grease, and, you know, and just bust it. And, you know, you can make magic happen for yourself.
All right, let's take some, we're winding down some questions from the audience. You, sir, in the beard.
We have a title out already, both on webcomic and printed, and one of the things our editor was suggesting that might help, like what Heidi was talking about, collecting niches of various audiences, is doing crossovers with other companies. And you would probably know the best of that. Have you been trying this, and how's it been working out for you?
You know, we haven't done any crossovers.
Have you had experience with people who have?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
I mean, I think in theory it's good, but, you know, I don't, you know, if you're a not a known quantity and you're having a crossover with another not a known quantity, you know, it's...
Well, you can get a lot of mileage out of sort of cross-promoting laterally. Like, you're not going to cross-promote with Marvel, but if you are, you know, your friends or colleagues who have books on the same level as you, that you know, if their audience is 10, that may still be 10 people who have never heard of your book before.
We stuck Will Wheaton in a rack installment, and I mean, I've met Will a few times. He's a really good guy, and I shot him an email and said, "Hey, we put you in the rack." That was 35,000 hits in 24 hours, so, you know.
Flatter celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah. Flatter celebrities all.
Will is such a great guy.
In the back of the cab.
I love being here
with
so many like-minded individuals, and appreciate your time. And I was wondering, I was trying to start a comic book club. Look at me weird at a bookstore because everyone has a book club and I got treated kind of like crap. I was wondering if there's any type of outreach programs, if you could get kind of attached to like a MySpace or a Facebook, or create your own little free social networking site to bring comic fans together and have like a comic book club. Because I'm missing out on
it. Yeah, I mean, I think what's... Panel Pixel is a great message board. You can Google that.
A good example is the Boston Comics Roundtable. Since I'm based in Boston, it's they put out like 3 anthologies. They support each other. They have like every week they have meetings, and it's kind of a rotating group of people that meets. So, and they're doing a really great job. They're definitely an example of something to look at. I mean, they set up a site in WordPress and had it up and running in, I think, a day.
What's important with groups like that is not, you know, nobody says, "I'm a part of this really cool comic book club. It's cool because I can favorite a member online."
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the tools or the software or what site it's on. It really has to do with the people, you know, the atmosphere, how welcoming you are, what you share with each other, the quality discussion, all those things. I think that's more important.
Well, here's your club right here. So
yeah,
you guys, when the panel's over, you know, everybody should network outside in the hall.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I'll also put this up on the beat. I'll put a mention. And, you know, I see a lot of hands, and they're definitely giving us the cut sign. So, you know, come on and post a question. You know, we'll try to continue the conversation over there, so online and out in the hall.
We'll take one more question right down here.
So I have a problem with Jacob Salary.
The question is, she finds herself changing her style with every mini comic, pros and cons.
If the story demands a different style, do it. Just make sure they know it's your story. I think if the authorial voice, I mean, you look at a guy like Alan Moore, you can tell an Alan Moore written comic no matter who draws it. And even if you're working in different styles, I mean, you've got guys like Chris Ware, he changes styles inside of a story. Shannon Wheeler's got four or five different working styles. Keith Knight's got three or four different working styles. I mean, just as long as you make sure that you promote your brand, you're basically a publishing house in indie comics. So as long as you promote your brand, I work with a bunch of different artists, but people always go, it's a Kevin Church comic with so-and-so doing the art.
And also, if you're looking to grow, just keep trying it, you know? And when you find something that works, then, you know, put a check mark and stick with that for one thing or something else, you know?
It never hurts to experiment and find your voice that way.
If that's your thing, double down on it.
Yeah. I'm getting the signal from the back of the room where I am. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.